disagrees, they're invited to step outside and settle this for once and for all. Oh, no, says Ma'am. They won't disagree, and they won't step outside, that bunch of tinkers and knackers and begrudges that hang around the pubs. They tell him he's a grand man, even if he's from the north, and 'twould be an honor to accept a pint from such a patriot. Ma'am tells Bridie, I don't know under God what I'm going to do. The dole is 19 shillings and 6 pence a week, the rent is 6 and 6, and that leaves 13 shillings to feed and clothe 5 people and keep us warm in the winter. Bridie drags in her woodbine, drinks her tea, and declares that God is good. Ma'am says she's sure God is good for someone somewhere, but he hasn't been seen lately in the lanes of Limerick. Bridie laughs.
Oh, Angela, you could go to hell for that.
And Ma'am says,
aren't they there already, Bridie?
And they laugh and drink their tea and smoke their woodbines and tell one another the fag is the only comfort they have. 'Tis. Question Quigley tells me I have to go to the Redemptorist Church on Friday and join the boys' division of the Arts Confraternity. You have to join. You can't say no. All the boys in the lanes and back streets that have fathers on the dole or working in labouring jobs have to join. Question says, your father is a foreigner from the north and he don't matter, but you still have to join. Everyone knows Limerick is the holiest city in Ireland because it has the Arch-Confraternity of the Holy Family, the biggest sodality in the world. Any city can have a confraternity. Only Limerick has the Arch. Our confraternity fills the Redemptorist Church 5 nights a week. 3 for the men, 1 for the women, 1 for the boys. There is benediction and hymn singing in English, Irish and Latin. And best of all, the big powerful sermon Redemptorist priests are famous for. It's the sermon that saves millions of Chinese and other heathens from winding up in hell with the Protestants. The question says, you have to join the confraternity so that your mother can tell the St. Vincent de Paul Society and they'll know you're a good Catholic. He says his father is a loyal member and that's how he got a good pensionable job cleaning lavatories at the railway station. And when he grows up himself, he'll get a good job too, unless he runs away and joins the Royal Canadian Mounted Police so that he can sing like Nelson Eddy singing to Jeanette MacDonald, expiring with consumption there on the sofa. If he brings me to the confraternity, the man in the office will write his name in a big book, and some day he might be promoted to prefect of a section, which is all he wants in life, next to wearing the Mountie uniform. The prefect is head of a section which has 30 boys from the same lanes and streets. Every section has the name of a saint whose picture is painted on a shield stuck on top of a pole by the prefect's seat. The prefect and his assistant take the attendance and keep an eye on us so that they can give us a thump on the head in case we laugh during benediction or commit any other sacrileges. If you miss one night, the man in the office wants to know why. Wants to know if you're slipping away from the confraternity. Or, he might say to the other man in the office,
I think our little friend here has taken the soup.
That's the worst thing you can say to any Catholic in Limerick or Ireland itself, because of what happened in the Great Famine. If you're absent twice, the man in the office sends you a yellow summons to appear and explain yourself. And if you're absent 3 times, he sends the posse, which is 5 or 6 big boys from your section, who search the streets to make sure you're not out enjoying yourself when you should be on your knees at the confraternity praying for the Chinese and other lost souls. The posse will go to your house and tell your mother your immortal soul is in danger. Some mothers will worry, but others will say,
get away from my door, or I come out and give everyone a good fong in the hole of your arse.
These are not good confraternity mothers, and the director will say we should pray for them, that they'll see the error of their ways. The worst thing of all is a visit from the director of the confraternity himself, Father Gorey.
He'll stand at the top of the lane and roar in a voice that converted the Chinese millions, "Where is the house of Frank McCourt?" He roars, even though he has your address in his pocket, knows very well where you live. He roars because he wants the world to know you're slipping away from the confraternity and putting your immortal soul in danger. The mothers are terrified, and the fathers will whisper, "I'm not here, I'm not here," and they'll make sure you go to the confraternity from this on out, so that they won't be disgraced and shamed entirely with the neighbours muttering behind their hands. The question takes me to the St. Finbar's section, and the prefect tells me, "Sit over there and shut up." His name is Declan Colopy. He's 14, and he has lumps in his forehead that look like horns. He has thick ginger eyebrows that meet in the middle and hang over his eyes, and his arms hang down to his kneecaps. He tells me he's making this the best section in the confraternity, and if I'm ever absent, he'll break my arse and send the bits to my mother. There's no excuse for absence because there was a boy in another section that was dying, and still they brought him in on a stretcher. He says, "If you're ever absent, it better be a death. Not a death in the family, but your own death. Do you hear me?" "I do, Declan." Boys in my section tell me that prefects get rewards if there's perfect attendance. Declan wants to get out of school as soon as he can and get a job selling linoleum at Canuck's big shop on Patrick Street. His uncle Fonsi sold linoleum there for years and made enough money to start his own shop in Dublin, where he has his three sons selling linoleum. Father Gorey, the director, can easily get Declan the reward of a job at Canuck's if he's a good prefect and has perfect attendance in his section. And that's why Declan will destroy us if we're absent. He tells us, "No one will stand between me and the linoleum." Declan likes Question Quigley and lets him miss an occasional Friday night because the question said, "Declan, when I grow up and get married, I'm going to cover my house in linoleum and I'll buy it all from you." Other boys in the section try this trick with Declan, but he says, "Bugger off. You'll be lucky enough to have a pot to piss in, never mind yards of linoleum." Dad says when he was my age in Toom, he served Mass for years, and it's time for me to be an altar boy. Mam says, "What's the use? The child doesn't have proper clothes for school, never mind the altar." Dad says the altar boy robes will cover the clothes, and she says, "We don't have the money for robes and the wash they need every week." He says, "God will provide," and makes me kneel on the kitchen floor. He takes the part of the priest, for he has the whole Mass in his head, and I have to know the responses. He says, "In troibo ad altari dei," and I have to say, "Ad deum qui latificat juventutem meam." Every evening after tea, I kneel for the Latin, and he won't let me move till I'm perfect. Mam says he could at least let me sit, but he says Latin is sacred, and it is to be learned and recited on the knees. You won't find the Pope sitting around drinking tea while he speaks the Latin. The Latin is hard, and my knees are sore and scabby, and I'd like to be out in the lane playing, though still I'd like to be an altar boy, helping the priest vest in the sacristy, up there on the altar, all decked out in my red and white robes like my pal Jimmy Clark, answering the priest in Latin, moving the big book from one side of the tabernacle to the other, pouring water and wine into the chalice, pouring water over the priest's hands, ringing the bell at consecration, kneeling, bowing, swinging the censer at benediction, sitting off to the side with the palms of my hands and my knees, all serious while he gives his sermon. Everyone in St. Joseph's looking at me and admiring my ways. In a fortnight I have the Mass in my head, and it's time to go to St. Joseph's to see the sacristan, Stephen Carey, who's in charge of altar boys. Dad polishes my boots, Mam darns my socks and throws an extra coal in the fire to heat up the iron to press my shirt. She boils water to scrub my head, neck, hands and knees, and any inch of skin that shows.
She scrubs till my skin burns, and tells Dad she wouldn't give it to the world to say her son went on the altar dirty. She wishes I didn't have scabby knees from running around kicking canisters and falling down, pretending I was the greatest footballer in the world. She wishes we had a drop of hair oil in the house, but water and spit will keep my hair from sticking up like black straw on a mattress. She warns me, speak up when I go to St. Joseph's, and don't be mumbling in English or Latin. She says, 'Tis a great pity you grew out of your first communion suit, but you have nothing to be ashamed of. You come from good blood, McCourts, Sheehan's, or my mother's family, the Guilfoyles, that owned acre after acre in County Limerick before the English took it away and gave it to footpads from London.' Dad holds my hand going through the streets, and people look at us because of the way we're saying Latin back and forth. He knocks at the sacristy door and tells Stephen Carey, 'This is my son Frank, who knows the Latin and is ready to be an altar boy.' Stephen Carey looks at him, then me. He says, 'We don't have room for him,' and closes the door. Dad is still holding my hand and squeezes till it hurts, and I want to cry out. He says nothing on the way home. He takes off his cap, sits by the fire, and lights a woodbine. Mam is smoking too. 'Well,' she says, 'is he going to be an altar boy?' 'There's no room for him.' 'Oh.' She pops on her woodbine. 'I'll tell you what it is,' she says. 'Tis class distinction. They don't want boys from lanes on the altar. They don't want the ones with scabby knees and the hair sticking up. Oh, no. They want the nice boys with hair oil and new shoes that have fathers with suits and ties and steady jobs. That's what it is, and 'tis hard to hold on to the faith with the snobbery that's in it.' 'Och, aye.' 'Oh, och, aye, my arse. That's all you ever say. You could go to the priest and tell him you have a son that has a head stuffed with Latin. And why can't he be an altar boy, and what is he going to do with all that Latin?' 'Ach, he might grow up to be a priest.' I ask him if I can go out and play. 'Yes,' he says, 'go out and play.' Mam says, 'You might as well.'" Mr. O'Neill is the master in the fourth class at school. We call him Dotty because he's small like a dot. He teaches in the one classroom with a platform so that he can stand above us and threaten us with his ash plant and peel his apple for all to see. The first day of school in September, he writes on the blackboard three words which are to stay there the rest of the year. Euclid, geometry, idiot. He says if he catches any boy interfering with these words, that boy will go through the rest of his life with one hand. He says anyone who doesn't understand the theorems of Euclid is an idiot. Now repeat after me. Anyone who doesn't understand the theorems of Euclid is an idiot. Of course, we all know what an idiot is because that's what the masters keep telling us we are. Brendan Quigley raises his hand. Sir, what's a theorem, and what's a Euclid? We expect Dotty to lash at Brendan the way all the masters do when you ask them a question, but he looks at Brendan with a little smile. And now, here's a boy with not one, but two questions. What is your name, boy?
Brendan Quigley, sir.
This is a boy who will go far. Where will he go, boys?
Far, sir.
Indeed, and he will. The boy who wants to know something about the grace, elegance, and beauty of Euclid can go nowhere but up. In what direction and no other can this boy go, boys?
Up, sir.
Without Euclid, boys, mathematics would be a poor, doddering thing. Without Euclid, we wouldn't be able to go from here to there. Without Euclid, the bicycle would have no wheel. Without Euclid, St. Joseph could not have been a carpenter, for carpentry is geometry, and geometry is carpentry. Without Euclid, this very school could never have been built. Paddy Clossy mutters behind me, Feckin' Euclid. Dotty barks at him. You boy, what is your name?
Classy, sir.
Ah, the boy flies on one wing. What is your Christian name?
Paddy.
Paddy what?
Paddy, sir.
And what, Paddy, were you saying to McCourt?
I said we should get down on our two knees and thank God for Euclid.
I'm sure you did, Classy. I see the lie festering in your teeth. What do I see, boys?
The lie, sir.
And what is the lie doing, boys?
Festering, sir.
Where, boys, where?
In his teeth, sir.
Euclid, boys, was a Greek. What, Classy, is a Greek?
Some class of a foreigner, sir.
Classy, you're a half-wit. Now, Brendan, surely you know what a Greek is.
Yes, sir. Euclid was a Greek.
Dotty gives him the little smile. He tells Classy he should model himself on Quigley, who knows what a Greek is. He draws two lines side by side and tells us these are parallel lines, and the magical and mysterious thing is that they never meet. Not if they were to be extended to infinity. Not if they were extended to God's shoulders, and that, boys, is a long way. Though there's a German Jew who's upsetting the whole world with his ideas on parallel lines. We listen to Dotty and wonder what all this has to do with the state of the world, with the Germans marching everywhere and bombing everything that stands. We can't ask him ourselves, but we can get Brendan Quigley to do it. Anyone can see Brendan is the master's pet, and that means he can ask any question he likes. After school, we tell Brendan he has to ask the question tomorrow. What use is Euclid and all these lines that go on forever when the Germans are bombing everything? Brendan says he doesn't want to be the master's pet. He didn't ask for it, and he doesn't want to ask the question. He's afraid if he asks that question, Dotty will attack him. We tell him if he doesn't ask the question, we'll attack him. Next day, Brendan raises his hand. Dotty gives him the little smile.
Sir, what use is Euclid and all the lines when the Germans are bombing everything that stands?
The little smile is gone. Ah, Brendan. Ah, Quigley. Oh, boys, oh, boys. He lays his stick on the desk and stands on the platform with his eyes closed. What use is Euclid, he says. Use? Without Euclid, the Messerschmitt could never have taken to the sky. Without Euclid, the Spitfire could not dart from cloud to cloud. Euclid brings us grace and beauty and elegance. What does he bring us, boys?
Grace, sir.
And?
Beauty, sir.
And?
Elegance, sir.
Euclid is complete in himself and divine in application. Do you understand that, boys?
We do, sir.
I doubt it, boys. I doubt it. To love Euclid is to be alone in this world. He opens his eyes and sighs, and you can see the eyes are a little watery. Paddy Clossy is leaving school that day, and he's stopped by Mr. O'Dea, who teaches the fifth class. Mr. O'Dea says,
You, what's your name?
Clossy, sir.
What class are you in?
Fourth class, sir.
Now tell me, Clossy, is that master of yours talking to you about Euclid?
He is, sir.
And what is he saying?
He's saying he's a Greek.
Of course he is, you dithering Amadon. What else is he saying?
He's saying there would be no school without Euclid.
Ah. Now is he drawing anything on the board?
He's drawing lines side by side that will never meet, even if they land on God's shoulders.
Mother of God.
No, sir. God's shoulders.
I know, you idiot. Go home.
The next day there's a great noise at our classroom door, and Mr. O'Dea is yelling,
Come out, O'Neill, you chancer, you poltroon.
We can hear everything he's saying because of the broken glass over the door. The new headmaster, Mr. O'Halloran, is saying,
Now, now, Mr. O'Dea, control yourself. No quarrelling in front of our pupils.
Well then, Mr. O'Halloran, tell him stop teaching the geometry.
The geometry is for the fifth form and not the fourth. The geometry is mine. Tell him to teach the long division and leave Euclid to me. Long division will stretch his intellect, such as it is, God help us. I don't want the minds of these boys destroyed by that chancer up there on the platform, him handing out apple skins and causing diarrhea right and left. Tell him Euclid is mine, Mr. O'Halloran, or I'll put a stop to his gallop.
Mr. O'Halloran tells Mr. O'Dea to return to his classroom and asks Mr. O'Neill to step into the hall. Mr. O'Halloran says,
"Now, Mr. O'Neill, I have asked you before to stay away from Euclid."
"You have, Mr. O'Halloran, but you might as well ask me to stop eating my daily apple."
"I'll have to insist, Mr. O'Neill. No more Euclid."
Mr. O'Neill comes back to the room, and his eyes are watery again. He says little has changed since the time of the Greeks, for the barbarians are within the gates, and their names are Legion.
What has changed since the time of the Greeks, boys?
It's torture to watch Mr. O'Neill peel the apple every day, to see the length of it, red or green, and if you're up near him, to catch the freshness of it in your nose. If you're the good boy for that day, and you answer the questions, he gives it to you and lets you eat it there at your desk, so that you can eat it in peace with no one to bother you, the way they would if you took it into the yard. Then they torment you. "Give me a piece, give me a piece," and you'd be lucky to have an inch left for yourself. There are days when the questions are too hard, and he torments us by dropping the apple peel into the wastebasket. Then he borrows a boy from another class to take the wastebasket down to the furnace to burn papers and apple peel. Or he'll leave it for the charwoman, Nellie Ahern, to take it all away in her big canvas sack. We'd like to ask Nellie to keep the peel for us before the rats get it, but she's weary from cleaning the whole school by herself, and she snaps at us. "I have other things to be doing with me life besides watching a scabby bunch rooting around for the skin of an apple. Go away." He peels the apple slowly. He looks around the room with a little smile. He teases us.
"Do you think, boys, I should give this to the pigeons on the windowsill?"
We say, "No, sir. Pigeons don't eat apples."
Paddy Clossy calls out,
"'Twill give them the run, sir, and we'll all have it on our heads abroad in the yard."
"Clossy, you are an omadhaun. Do you know what an omadhaun is?"
"I don't, sir."
"It's the Irish Clossy, your native tongue Clossy. An omadhaun is a fool, Clossy. You are an omadhaun. What is he, boys?"
"An omadhaun, sir."
Clossy says,
"That's what Mr. O'Deal called me, sir, a dithering omadhaun."
He pauses in his peeling to ask us questions about everything in the world, and the boy with the best answers wins.
"Hands up," he says. "Who is the President of the United States of America?"
Every hand in the class goes up, and we're all disgusted when he asks the question that any omadhaun would know. We call out, "Roosevelt!" Then he says, "You, Mulcahy, who stood at the foot of the cross when our Lord was crucified?" Mulcahy is slow.
"The 12 apostles, sir."
"Mulcahy, what is the Irish word for fool?"
"Omadhaun, sir."
"And what are you, Mulcahy?"
"An omadhaun, sir."
Fintan Slattery raises his hand.
"I know who stood at the foot of the cross, sir."
Of course Fintan knows who stood at the foot of the cross. Why wouldn't he? He's always running off to Mass with his mother, who is known for her holiness. She's so holy, her husband ran off to Canada to cut down trees, glad to be gone and never to be heard from again. She and Fintan say the rosary every night on their knees in the kitchen and read all kinds of religious magazines. The Little Messenger of the Sacred Heart, The Lantern, The Far East, as well as every little book printed by the Catholic Truth Society. They go to Mass and Communion, rain or shine, and every Saturday they confess to the Jesuits, who are known for their interest in intelligent sins, Not the usual sins you hear from people in lanes, who are known for getting drunk and sometimes eating meat on Fridays before it goes bad, and cursing on top of it. Fintan and his mother live on Catherine Street, and Mrs. Slattery's neighbours call her Mrs. Offer It Up, because no matter what happens, a broken leg, a spilled cup of tea, a disappeared husband, she says, "Well, now, I'll offer that up, and I'll have no end of indulgences to get me into heaven." Fintan is just as bad. If you push him in the schoolyard or call him names, he'll smile and tell you he'll pray for you, and he'll offer it up for his soul and yours. The boys in Leamy's don't want Fintan praying for them, and they threaten to give him a good fong in the arse if they catch him praying for them. He says he wants to be a saint when he grows up, which is ridiculous because you can't be a saint till you're dead. He says our grandchildren would be praying to his picture. One big boy says, "My grandchildren will piss on your picture." And Fintan just smiles. His sister ran away to England when she was 17, and everyone knows he wears her blouse at home and curls his hair with hot iron tongs every Saturday night so that he'll look gorgeous at Mass on Sunday. If he meets you going to Mass, he'll say, "Isn't my hair gorgeous, Frankie?" He loves that word, gorgeous, and no other boy will ever use it. Of course he knows who stood at the foot of the cross. He probably knows what they were wearing, what they had for breakfast, and now he's telling Dotty O'Neill it was the three Marys. Dotty says, "Come up here, Fintan, and take your reward." He takes his time going to the platform, and we can't believe our eyes when he takes out a pocket knife to cut the apple peel into little bits so that he can eat them one by one and not be stuffing the whole thing into his mouth like the rest of us when we win. He raises his hand. "Sir, I'd like to give some of my apple away." "The apple, Fintan? No, indeed. You do not have the apple, Fintan. You have the peel, the mere skin. You have not, nor will you ever achieve heights so dizzy you'll be feasting on the apple itself. Not my apple, Fintan. Now, did I hear you say you want to give away your reward?"
"You did, sir. I'd like to give 3 pieces to Quigley, Clossie, and McCourt."
"Why, Fintan?"
"They're my friends, sir."
The boys around the room are sneering and nudging each other, and I feel ashamed because they'll say I curl my hair and I'll be tormented in the schoolyard. And why does he think I'm his friend? If they say I wear my sister's blouse, there's no use telling them I don't have a sister because they'll say, "Ah, you'd wear it if you had a sister." There's no use saying anything in the schoolyard because there's always someone with an answer, and there's nothing you can do but punch them in the nose, and if you were to punch everyone who has an answer, you'd be punching morning, noon, and night. Quigley takes the bit of peel from Fintan. "Thanks, Fintan." The whole class is looking at Clossie, because he's the biggest and the toughest. And if he says thanks, I'll say thanks. He says, "Thanks very much, Fintan," and blushes. And I say, "Thanks very much, Fintan." And I try to stop myself from blushing, but I can't. And all the boys sneer again, and I'd like to hit them. After school, the boys call to Fintan. "Hi, Fintan, are you going home to curl your gorgeous hair?" Fintan smiles and climbs the steps of the schoolyard. A big boy from 7th class says to Paddy Clossie, "I suppose you'd be curling your hair too if you wasn't a baldy with a shaved head." Paddy says, "Sure up." And the boy says, "Oh, and who's going to make me?" Paddy tries a punch, but the big boy hits his nose and knocks him down and there's blood. I try to hit the big boy, but he grabs me by the throat and bangs my head against the wall till I see lights and black dots. Paddy walks away holding his nose and crying, and the big boy pushes me after him. Fintan is outside on the street and he says, "Oh, Francis, Francis. Oh, Patrick, Patrick, what's up? Why are you crying, Patrick?" And Paddy says, "I'm hungry. I can't fight nobody because I'm starving with the hunger and falling down and I'm ashamed of myself." Fintan says,
Come with me, Patrick. My mother will give us something. And Paddy says, I know, me nose is bleeding. Don't worry. She'll put something on your nose or a key in the back of your neck. Francis, you must come too. You always look hungry. I know, Fintan. I do, Francis. All right, Fintan.
Fintan's flat is like a chapel. There are two pictures, the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Jesus is showing his heart with the crown of thorns, the fire, the blood. His head is tilted to the left to show his great sorrow. The Virgin Mary is showing her heart, and it would be a pleasant heart if it didn't have that crown of thorns. Her head is tilted to the right to show her sorrow, because she knows her son will come to a sad end. There's a picture on another wall of a man with a brown robe and birds sitting all over him. Fintan says,
Do you know who that is, Francis? No, that's your patron, St. Francis of Assisi. And do you know what today is?
The 4th of October.
That's right, and it's his feast day, and special for you because you can ask St. Francis for anything, and he'll surely give it to you. That's why I wanted you to come here today. Sit down, Patrick. Sit down, Francis.
Mrs. Slattery comes in with her rosary beads in her hand. She's happy to meet Fintan's new friends. And would we like a cheese sandwich?
And look at your poor nose, Patrick.
She touches his nose with the cross and her rosary beads and says a little prayer. She tells us these rosary beads were blessed by the Pope himself and would stop the flow of a river if requested. Never mind Patrick's poor nose. Fintan says he won't have a sandwich because he's fasting and praying for the boy who hit Paddy and me. Mrs. Slattery gives him a kiss on the head and tells him he's a saint out of heaven and asks if we'd like mustard on our sandwiches. And I tell her I never heard of mustard on cheese and I'd love it. Paddy says,
I dunno. I never had a sandwich in me life.
And we all laugh and I wonder how you could live 10 years like Paddy and never have a sandwich. Paddy laughs too. And you can see his teeth are white and black and green. We eat the sandwich and drink tea, and Paddy wants to know where the lavatory is. Fintan takes me through the bedroom to the backyard, and when they come back, Paddy says,
I have to go home. Me mother'll kill me. I'll wait for you outside, Frankie.
Now I have to go to the lavatory, and Fintan leads me to the backyard. He says, I have to go too. And when I unbutton my fly, I can't pee because he's looking at me and he says,
You were fooling. You don't have to go at all. I like to look at you, Francis, that's all. I wouldn't want to commit any class of a sin with our confirmation coming next year.
Paddy and I leave together. I'm bursting and I run behind the garage to pee. Paddy is waiting for me. And as we walk along Harston Street, he says,
That was a powerful sandwich, Frankie. And him and his mother is very holy, but I wouldn't want to go to Fintan's flat anymore because he's very odd. Isn't he, Frankie?
He is, Paddy.
The way he looks at it when you take it out. That's odd, isn't it, Frankie?
Tis, Paddy.
A few days later, Paddy whispers, Fintan Slattery said we could come over to his flat at lunchtime. His mother won't be there, and she leaves his lunch for him. He might give us some too, and he has lovely milk. Will we go? Fintan sits 2 rows from us. He knows what Paddy is saying to me, and he moves his eyebrows up and down as if to say, Will you come? I whisper yes to Paddy, and he nods to Fintan, and the master barks at us to stop waggling our eyebrows and our lips, or the ash plant will sing across our backsides. Boys in the schoolyard see the 3 of us walk out, and they pass remarks.
Oh, God, look at Fintan and his ingles.
Paddy says, Fintan, what's an ingle? And Fintan says, It's just a boy from olden times who sits in a corner, that's all. He tells us sit at the table in his kitchen and we can read his comic books if we like. Film Fun, The Beano, The Dandy, or the religious magazines, or his mother's romance magazines, The Miracle and The Oracle, which always have stories about factory girls who are poor but beautiful, in love with sons of earls and vice versa, and the factory girl ends up throwing herself into the Thames with the hopelessness, only to be rescued by a passing carpenter who is poor but honest, and will love the factory girl for her own humble self, though it turns out the passing carpenter is really the son of a duke, which is much higher than an earl, so that now the poor factory girl is a duchess and can look down her nose at the earl who spurned her, because she's happy tending her roses on her 12,000-acre estate in Shropshire and being kind to her poor old mother, who refuses to leave her humble little cottage for all the money in the world. Paddy says, I don't want to read nothing. It's all a cod, all them stories. Finton removes the cloth covering his sandwich and glass of milk. The milk looks creamy and cool and delicious, and the sandwich bread is almost as white. Paddy says, Is that a ham sandwich? And Finton says, Tis. Paddy says, That's a lovely-looking sandwich, and is there mustard on it? Finton nods and slices the sandwich in two. Mustard seeps out. He licks it off his fingers and takes a nice mouthful of milk. He cuts the sandwich again into quarters, 8/16, takes the little messenger of the Sacred Heart from the pile of magazines, and reads while he eats his sandwich bits and drinks his milk. And Paddy and I look at him, and I know Paddy is wondering what we're doing here at all, because that's what I'm wondering myself, hoping Finton will pass over the plate to us. But he doesn't. He finishes the milk, leaves bits of sandwich on the plate, covers it with the cloth, and wipes his lips in his dainty way, lowers his head, blesses himself, and says grace after meals, and God will be late for school, and blesses himself again on the way out, with holy water from the little china font hanging by the door with the little image of the Virgin Mary, showing her heart and pointing at it with two fingers, as if we couldn't make it out for ourselves. It's too late for Paddy and me to run and get the bun and milk from Nellie Ahern, and I don't know how I'm going to last from now till I can run home after school and get a piece of bread. Paddy stops at the school gate. He says, I can't go in there starving with the hunger. I'd fall asleep and Dotty'd kill me. Finton is anxious. Come on, we'll be late. Come on, Francis, hurry up. I'm not going in, Finton. You had your lunch. We had nothing. Paddy explodes. You're a feckin' chancer, Finton. That's what you are, and a feckin' begrudge or two with your feckin' sandwich and your feckin' Sacred Heart of Jesus on the wall and your feckin' holy water. You can kiss my arse, Finton. Oh, Patrick. Oh, Patrick, my feckin' arse, Finton. Come on, Frankie. Finton runs into school, and Paddy and I make our way to an orchard in Ballinacurra. We climb a wall, and a fierce dog comes at us till Paddy talks to him, tells him he's a good dog and we're hungry, and go home to your mother. The dog licks Paddy's face and trots away waving his tail, and Paddy is delighted with himself. We stuff apples into our shirt till we can barely get back over the wall to run into a long field and sit under a hedge eating the apples till we can't swallow another bit, and we stick our faces into a stream for the lovely, cool water. Then we run to opposite ends of a ditch to shit and wipe ourselves with grass and thick leaves. Paddy is squatting and saying, There's nothing in the world like a good field of apples, a drink of water and a good shit. Better than any sandwich of cheese and mustard, and Dotty O'Neill could shove his apple up his arse. There are three cows in a field with their heads over a stone wall, and they say moo to us. Paddy says, Be Jesus, 'tis milking time. And he's over the wall, stretched on his back under a cow with her big udder hanging in his face. He pulls in a teat and squirts milk into his mouth. He stops squirting and says, Come on, Frankie, fresh milk, 'tis lovely. Get that other cow, they're all ready for the milking. I get under the cow and pull in a teat, but she kicks and moves and I'm sure she's going to kill me. Paddy comes over and shows me how to do it. Pull hard and straight, and the milk comes out in a powerful stream. The two of us lie under the one cow, and we're having a great time filling ourselves with milk, when there's a roar, and there's a man with a stick charging across the field. We're over the wall in a minute, and he can't follow us because of his rubber boots. He stands at the wall and shakes his stick and shouts that if he ever catches us, we'll have the length of his boot up our arses. And we laugh because we're out of harm's way, and I'm wondering why anyone should be hungry in a world full of milk and apples. It's all right for Paddy to say Dotty can shove the apple up his arse. But I don't want to rob orchards and milk cows forever. And I'll always try to win Dotty's apple peel so that I can go home and tell Dad how I answer the hard questions. We're walking back through Ballinacurra. There's rain and lightning, and we run, but it's hard for me with the sole of my shoe flapping and threatening to trip me. Paddy can run all he wants in his long bare feet, and you hear them slapping on the pavement. My shoes and stockings are soaked, and they make their own sound, squish, squish. Paddy notices that, and we make a song from our two sounds, slap, slap, squish, squish, slap, squish, squish, slap. We laugh so hard over our song we have to hold on to one another. The rain gets heavier, and we know we can't stand under a tree or we'll be fried entirely, so we stand by a door which is opened in a minute by a big fat maid in a little white hat and a black dress with a little white apron, who tells us, get away from this door, we're a disgrace. We run from the door, and Paddy calls back, Mullingar, heifer, beef to the heels, and he laughs till he chokes and has to lean against a wall with the weakness. There's no sense in standing in from the rain any more. We're soaked to the skin, so we take our time down O'Connell Avenue. Paddy says he learned that Mullingar heifer thing from his uncle Peter, the one that was in India in the English army, and they have a photo of him standing with a group of soldiers with their helmets and guns and bandoliers around their chests, and there are dark men in uniform who are Indians and loyal to the king. Uncle Peter had a great time for himself in a place called Kashmir, which is lovelier than Killarney that they're always bragging about and singing. Paddy goes on again about running away and winding up in India in a silken tent with the girl with the red dot and the curry and the figs, and he's making me hungry, even if I'm stuffed with apples and milk. The rain is clearing, and there are birds honking over our heads. Paddy says they're ducks or geese or something on their way to Africa where it's nice and warm. The birds have more sense than the Irish. They come to the Shannon for their holidays, and then they go back to the warm places, maybe even India. He says he'll write me a letter when he's over there, and I can come to India and have my own girl with a red dot. What's that dot for, Paddy? It shows their high class, the quality. But, Paddy, would the quality in India talk to you if they knew you were from a lane in Limerick and had no shoes? Course they would, but the English quality wouldn't. The English quality wouldn't give you the steam of their piss.
Steam of their piss? God, Paddy, did you think of that yourself?
Nah. That's what my father says below in the bed when he's coughing up the gobs and blaming the English for everything.
And I think, steam of their piss. I'll keep that for myself. I'll go around Limerick saying it. Steam of their piss, steam of their piss. And when I go to America someday, I'll be the only one who knows it.
Question Quigley is wobbling towards us in a big woman's bicycle and calls to me,
Hi, Frankie McCourt, you're going to be killed. Dotty O'Neill sent a note to your house and said you didn't come back to school after lunch, that you went on the mooch with Paddy Clossy. Your mother is going to kill you, your father is out looking for you, and he's going to kill you too.
Oh, God, I feel cold and empty, and I wish I could be in India where it's nice and warm and there's no school, and my father could never find me to kill me.
Paddy tells the question. He didn't go on the mooch, and I didn't either. Fintan Slattery starved us to death, and we were too late for the bun and the milk. Then Paddy says to me, Don't mind them, Frankie, 'tis all a cod. They're always sending notes to our house, and we wipe our arses with them. My mother and father would never wipe their arses with a note from the master. And I'm afraid now to go home. The question rides off on the bicycle laughing, and I don't know why, because he once ran away from home and slept in a ditch with four goats, and that's worse than mooching from school half a day any time. I could turn up the Barrack Road now and go home and tell my parents I'm sorry I went on the mooch and I did it because of the hunger. But Paddy says, Come on, we'll go down the Dock Road and throw rocks in the Shannon. We throw rocks in the river and we swing on the iron chains along the bank. It's getting dark, and I don't know where I'm going to sleep. I might have to stay there by the Shannon, or find a door. Or I might have to go back out the country and find a ditch like Brendan Quigley with four goats. Paddy says I can go home with him. I can sleep on the floor and I'll dry out. Paddy lives in one of the tall houses on Arthur's Quay, looking at the river. Everyone in Limerick knows these houses are old and might fall down at any minute. Mam often says, I don't want any of ye going down to Arthur's Quay, and if I find ye there, I'll break your faces. The people down there are wild and ye could get robbed and killed. It's raining again, and small children are playing in the hallway and up the stairs. Paddy says, mind yourself, because some of the steps are missing, and there's shit on the ones that are still there. He says that's because there's only one privy and it's in the backyard, and children don't get down the stairs in time to put their little arses on the ball, God help us. There's a woman with a shawl sitting on the fourth flight smoking a cigarette. She says, is that you, Paddy? Tis, Mammy. I'm fagged out, Paddy. Them steps is killing me. Did you have your tea? I didn't. Well, I don't know if there's any bread left. Go up and see.
Paddy's family live in one big room with a high ceiling and a small fireplace. There are two tall windows and you can see out to the Shannon. His father is in a bed in the corner, groaning and spitting into a bucket. Paddy's brothers and sisters are on mattresses on the floor, sleeping, talking, looking at the ceiling. There's a baby with no clothes crawling over to Paddy's father's bucket, and Paddy pulls him away. His mother comes in, gasping, from the stairs.
Jesus, I'm dead, she says.
She finds some bread and makes weak tea for Paddy and me. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. They don't say anything. They don't say, what are you doing here, or go home, or anything, till Mr. Clossy says, who's that? And Paddy tells him, 'tis Frankie McCourt. Mr. Clossy says, McCourt, what class of a name is that? My father's from the north, Mr. Clossy. And what's your mother's name? Angela, Mr. Clossy. Ah, Jesus, 'twouldn't be Angela Sheehan, would it? 'Twould, Mr. Clossy. Ah, Jesus, he says. And he has a coughing fit, which brings up all kinds of stuff from his insides and has him hanging over the bucket. When the cough passes, he falls back on the pillow. Ah, Frankie, I knew your mother well. Dance with her. Mother of Christ, I'm dying inside. Dance with her I did below in the Wembley Hall, and a champion dancer she was too. He hangs over the bucket again. He gasps for air and reaches his arms out to get it. He suffers, but he won't stop talking. Champion dancer she was, Frankie. Not skinny, mind you, but a feather in my arms. And there was many a sorry man when she left Limerick. Can you dance, Frankie? I know, Mr. Clossy. Paddy says, he can, Dada. He had the lessons from Mrs. O'Connor and Cyril Benson. Well, dance, Frankie. Round the house and mind the dresser, Frankie. Lift the foot, lad. I can't, Mr. Clossy. I'm no good. No good. Angela Sheehan's son. Dance, Frankie, or I'll get out of this bed and wheel you around the house. My shoe was broken, Mr. Clossy. Frankie, Frankie, you're bringing the cough on me. Will you dance for the love of Jesus so I can remember me youth with your mother in the Wembley Hall? Take off the feckin' shoe, Frankie, and dance. I have to make up dances and tunes to go with them, the way I did a long time ago when I was young. I dance around the room with one shoe because I forgot to take it off. I try to make up words. Oh, the walls of Limerick are falling down, falling down, falling down. The walls of Limerick falling down and the River Shannon kills us. Mr. Clossy is laughing in the bed. Ah, Jesus, I never heard the likes of that on land or sea. That's a great leg for the dancing you have there, Frankie. Ah, Jesus. He coughs and brings up ropes of green and yellow stuff. It makes me sick to look at it. And I wonder if I should go home from all this sickness in this bucket and let my parents kill me if they want to.
Paddy lies down on a mattress by the window, and I lie beside him. I keep my clothes on like everybody else, and I even forget to take off my other shoe, which is wet and squishy and stinks. Paddy falls asleep right away, and I look at his mother, sitting by the bit of a fire, smoking another cigarette. Paddy's father groans and coughs and spits into the bucket. He says, "Feckin' blood," and she says, "You'll have to go into the sanatorium sooner or later." "I will not. The day they put you in there is the end of you. You could be given the consumption to the children. I could get the guards to take you away. You're that much of a danger to the children. If they were to get it, they'd have it be now." The fire dies, and Mrs. Clossie climbs over him into the bed. In a minute she's snoring, even if he's still coughing, and laughing about the days of his youth when he danced with Angela Sheehan, light as a feather, in the Wembley Hall. It's cold in the room, and I'm shivering in my wet clothes. Paddy is shivering too, but he's asleep, and he doesn't know he's cold. I don't know if I should stay here or get up and go home, but who wants to be wandering the streets when a guard might ask her what you're doing out? It's my first time away from my family, and I know I'd rather be in my own house with the smelly lavatory and stable next door. It's bad when our kitchen is a lake, and we have to go up to Italy. But it's worse than the classes when you have to go down 4 flights to the lavatory and slip on shit all the way down. I'd be better off with 4 goats in a ditch. I drift in and out of sleep, but I have to wake up for good when Mrs. Clossie goes around pulling at her family to get them up. They all went to bed with their clothes on so they don't have to get dressed and there's no fighting. They grumble and run out the door to get downstairs to the backyard lavatory. I have to go too, and I run down with Paddy, but his sister Peggy is on the ball and we have to piss against the wall. She says, "I'll tell Ma what she did." And Paddy says, "Shut up or I'll push you down into that feckin' lavatory." She jumps off the lavatory, pulls her drawers up and runs up the stairs crying, "I'll tell, I'll tell." And when we get back to the room, Mrs. Clossie gives Paddy a belt on the head for what he did to his poor little sister. Paddy says nothing because Mrs. Clossie is spooning porridge into mugs and jam jars and one bowl and telling us to eat up and go to school. She sits at the table eating her porridge. Her hair is grey-black and dirty. It dangles in the bowl and picks up bits of porridge and drops of milk. The children slurp their porridge and complain they didn't get enough. They're starving with the hunger. They have snotty noses and sore eyes and scabby knees. Mr. Clossie coughs and squirms on the bed and brings up the great gobs of blood, and I run out of the room and puke on the stairs where there's a step missing, and there's a shower of porridge and bits of apple to the floor below where people go back and forth to the lavatory in the yard. Paddy comes down and says, "Sure, that's all right. Everyone gets sick and shits on them stairs, and the whole feckin' place is falling down anyway." I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. If I go back to school, I'll be killed. And why should I go back to school or go home to get killed when I can go out the road and live on milk and apples the rest of my life till I go to America? Paddy says, "Come on, school is all a cod anyway, and the masters is all madmen." There's a knock at the Clossie's door, and it's Mam holding my little brother Michael by the hand, and Gar Dennehy, who's in charge of school attendance. Mam sees me and says, "What are you doing with one shoe on?" And Gar Dennehy says, "Ah, no, missus, I think a more important question would be, what are you doing with one shoe off, ha, ha?" Michael runs to me. "Mammy was crying. Mammy was crying for you, Frankie." She says, "Where were you all night?" "I was here. You had me demented. Your father walked every street in Limerick looking for you." Mr. Clossie says, "Who's at the door?" "It's my mother, Mr. Clossie." "God above, is that Angela?" "'Tis, Mr. Clossie." He struggles up on his elbows. "Well, for the love of God, will you come in, Angela? Don't you know me?" Ma'am looks puzzled. It's dark in the room, and she tries to make out who's in the bed. He says, "'Tis me, Dennis Clossie, Angela." "Ah, no. 'Tis Angela." "Ah, no." I know, Angela. I'm changed. The cough is killing me. But I remember the nights at the Wembley Hall. Ah, Jesus, you were a great dancer. Nights at the Wembley Hall, Angela, and the fish and chips after. Oh, boys, Angela. My mother has tears running down her face. She says, you were a great dancer yourself, Dennis Classy. We could have won competitions, Angela. Fred and Ginger would have been looking over their shoulders, but you had to run off to America. Ah, Jesus. He has another coughing fit, and we have to stand and watch him hang over the bucket again and bring up the bad stuff from his insides. Garden, he says, I think, Mrs., we found the bite, and I'll be going. He says to me, if you ever go on the mooch again, boy, we'll have you in the jail above. Are you listening to me, boy?
I am, guard.
Don't be tormenting your mother. That's one thing the guards won't put up with, the tormenting of mothers.
I won't, guard. I won't torment her.
He leaves, and ma'am goes to the bed to take Mr. Clossy's hand. His face is caved in all around his eyes, and his hair is shiny black with the sweat running from the top of his head. His children stand around the bed looking at him and looking at ma'am. Mrs. Clossy sits by the fire rattling the poker in the grate and pushing the baby away from the fire. She says,
'Tis his own bloody fault for not going into the hospital, so 'tis.
Mr. Clossy gasps, I'd be all right if I could live in a dry place. Angela, is America a dry place?
Oh, 'tis, Dennis.
The doctor told me to go to Arizona. A funny man, that doctor. Arizona, how are you? I don't have the money to go around the corner for a pint.
Ma'am says,
Ah, you'll be all right, Dennis. I'll light a candle for you.
Save your money, Angela. My dancing days are done.
I have to go now, Dennis. My son has to go to school.
Before you go, Angela, will you do one thing for me?
I will, Dennis, if 'tis in my power.
Would you ever give us a verse of that song you sang the night before you went to America?
Well, that's a hard song, Dennis. I wouldn't have the wind for it.
Ah, come on, Angela. I never hear a song anymore. There isn't a song in this house. The wife there doesn't have a note in her head and no step in her foot.
Ma'am says, all right, I'll try. Oh, the nights of the Kerry dancing, oh, the ring of the piper's tune. Oh, for one of those hours of gladness gone, alas, like are you too soon. When the boys began to gather in the glen of a summer night, and the Kerry piper's tuning made us long with wild delight.
She stops and presses her hand to her chest. Oh, God, me wind is gone. Help me, Frank, with the song.
And I sing along.
Oh, to think of it, oh, to dream of it, fills my heart with tears. Oh, the nights of the Kerry dancing, oh, the ring of the piper's tune. Oh, for one of those hours of gladness, gone, alas, like are you too soon.
Mr. Clossy tries to sing with us.
Gone, alas, like our youth too soon.
But it brings on the cough. He shakes his head and cries, I wouldn't doubt you, Angela. It takes me back. God bless you.
God bless you too, Dennis. And thanks, Mrs. Clossy, for having Frankie here off the streets.
'Twas no trouble, Mrs. McCourt. He's quiet enough.
Quite enough, says Mr. Clossy, but he's not the dancer his mother was.
Ma'am says, 'Tis hard to dance with one shoe, Dennis.
I know, Angela, but you'd wonder why he didn't take it off. Is he a bit strange?
Eh, sometimes he has the odd manner like his father.
Ah, yes. The father's from the north, Angela, and that would account for it. They'd think nothing of dancing with one shoe in the north.
We walk up Patrick Street and O'Connell Street, Paddy Clossy and Ma'am and Michael and myself. And Ma'am sobs all the way,
Michael says, "Don't cry, Mammy. Frankie won't run away." She lifts him up and hugs him. "Oh, no, Michael. 'Tisn't Frankie I'm crying about. 'Tis Dennis Clossing and the dancing nights at the Wembley Hall and the fish and chips after.